Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, listeners to this show will recognise my next guest, Larry Donnelly, lecturer in law at NUI Galway, native of Boston and now author of The Bostonian, a book about his own life and the twists and turns in his own political beliefs. And he's here to tell us about it. Good morning to you. You're very welcome.
Great to be with you, Claire.
So you come from a family of politicians in Boston, pretty fair to say.
Yeah, that's right. My two great uncles were Boston City Councillors and held a number of different elected and appointed offices in Massachusetts. And then a lot of listeners will be familiar with my Uncle Brian, who is Brian Donnelly, United States Congressman, who sponsored the Donnelly Visa Program and is probably holds the distinction, I would say, among American politicians for being better known in another country than he is in his own.
The family background then, your dad called it the family business, didn't he? It was politics. So Boston, Irish and Democrat, but you, for a period of time, ended up being a card-carrying member of the Republicans. What happened?
Yeah, this is my true confession in the book. I suppose it was a sad act of teenage rebellion, but there's more to it than that. Look, in the 1970s and 1980s, and I talk a lot about what Boston was like, the city went through an awful lot, in particular the forced busing issue, and there was a lot of resentment against the Democratic Party and against, to some extent, the Kennedy family for, I suppose, betraying the people on the ground, and in particular for moving to the left on cultural and social issues. And that was very much to the fore in the Democratic politics I grew up with. And I suppose I embraced it overzealously to the extent that I drifted to the other side and initially became a Republican. As I say in the book, I was probably young, I was probably immature, but there was some real deep-seated anger at the Democratic Party for what we perceived to be a betrayal from its roots. And that came from my dad, who never left the party, but was quite disenchanted and remained disenchanted until his death.
And how did he feel then about you becoming a Republican for that time?
He thought I was crazy. Well, first of all, he thought it was the great betrayal in the sense that he was committed to staying in the party and fighting for the party and fighting for the values that we believed always made us Democrats and united us. He also took the stance, I mean, I had political ambitions at the time, and he said, you must be out of your mind if becoming a Republican if you think you're going to win anything in Massachusetts. And he certainly was correct on that front.
And what happened then to take you back to the Democrats?
I grew up to some extent. I don't want to mean that as casting aspersions on Republicans. A lot of my friends are Republicans, and I respect their beliefs. But from my own point of view, it was me reaching a realization that not everyone had it as lucky as I did. I would have been quite economically conservative as well as socially conservative. And I had an attitude that people didn't deserve social welfare benefits, that there shouldn't be a minimum wage, all these kind of radical libertarian ideas, but a little bit of life experience. And I talk in the book both my experience of going to law school. I didn't go to an elite law school. I went to a law school with a lot of people who were the first in their families to become lawyers. And hearing their experiences, hearing their backgrounds was really interesting. Meeting a lot of people of color, for instance, was a hugely revealing experience for me, that they didn't have a life as easy as I did. They didn't have parents who cared for them, looked after them. They weren't in communities that were necessarily safe and everything else that I'd always taken for granted. And over time, to be frank, I also worked in fast food for a while at the bottom level, something my dad made me do. And all of that combined to say, look, there's a reason why our family, since we left the West of Ireland, have always been committed to the Democratic Party. And that's why I switched back. And that's why I'm a Democrat to this day.
And you followed your father into the career in law, which you've described there. Then you reversed the family journey. So you came back to Ireland, if you like, or you moved to Ireland with your job in NUIG. And you say in the book that that journey back, that changed your life.
Yes, it did. I was a committed Bostonian. I never envisaged anything other than being a Boston lawyer who dabbled in politics here and there. I made a trip here in 2000 for a friend's cousin's wedding, and it changed my life because I fell in love with Ireland from the minute I got here. And it wasn't just the party, it wasn't just the wedding. There was a lot more to it. And what I say in the book is that it was the first time I had ever left Boston that I didn't want to really come come back to it. And again, you know, as a Bostonian, we tend to be kind of parochial. We tend to kind of think ours is the hub of the universe. So this was a new experience for me altogether. And once I made that initial trip, I put all my efforts into getting back here. And fortunately, I stumbled into a fellowship at NUI Galway, which was awarded to me by Professor Jared Quinn, who I will always be indebted to. And the rest really is history.
Mm-hmm. And then you met and married our colleague here, Eileen Whelan. Do you want to say something about it?
No. I did. You know, thanks to the, you know, and there's two people who claim responsibility for that. One is my colleague, Professor Dunico O'Connell. The other is another RTE colleague, Teresa Mannion. They often duel out as to who is responsible for meeting, but certainly meeting Eileen changed my life.
Yes, and that meant that you were not going back. You were staying here. How did your family in Boston, though, feel about that?
It was interesting because I met Eileen just a couple of months before my mom passed away, and things moved pretty quickly. And you know, it was only a few months after my mom had died that I was introducing my dad to Eileen, and I was introducing him to her for a reason. Things were getting hot and heavy pretty quick, and my dad initially was apprehensive. You know, he thought maybe you're not thinking straight. You know, mom just died, et cetera, et cetera. And I just kept plodding ahead because I knew I'd found the one. And Dad warmed to Eileen very quickly. I mean, he really, really did. And so any lingering doubts were cast aside. And certainly all of my friends and family absolutely adore Eileen. They adore Sean, Eileen's son, who kindly took me into his life from day one. So everything really worked out well at a family level. And now we have another Larry in the mix. So, you know, as I say in the book, Ireland, both personally and professionally, has been a land of opportunity.
Was there any romanticism there for your father when he realized that you were going back to Ireland?
There was, to an extent, because back in the 1980s, it might sound strange, but my dad was also a lawyer, and also, like me, a lawyer who's disenchanted by law practice. And for a time in the 1980s, he was pleading with my mother, who was a Scottish immigrant to the United States. He was pleading. He first said, let's go to Scotland. My mother said, I didn't want to go. I won't go there. But she would go to Ireland. And Dad toyed with the idea for a number of years. And my brother and I, naturally young guys who immersed in our sports and our friends, no, we're not going there. No way. So the idea had been there for Dad for some time. So I think he was very intrigued by the idea. I mean, we were very close. So I don't think he liked the idea of me being so far away, but he certainly took every opportunity. And my mom did too before she passed away. They took every opportunity to spend as much time here as they could.
I know you say at the beginning of the book, you know, how sad it makes you that your dad didn't live to see the book and to read it. And he only died in April of this year. And it's very difficult to deal with the death of a parent, but in particular when you're not there.
Yeah, it was really hard. You know, it was, you know, COVID circumstances. You know, Dad had been declining for the past number of years. But, you know, when I got the call from my brother saying, look, it really is the end now, I had to weigh everything up. And at the time, traveling just wasn't feasible. So it was really hard to do that. I have to say, technology was extraordinary. It made us feel like we were there. Eileen was her usual brilliant self, but it was hard. And I sincerely do wish he was here, and I wish Mom was here to read it, because Dad would give me kind of a wry smile and say, you're full of you-know-what, whereas Mom would be trying to sell it to anybody who would listen.
Well, that's the job of the mammy. So let's talk a little bit about politics, because you devote the second half of the book, don't you, to looking at politics, both here and in the United States. I was just struck in recent times watching a bit of CNN and Donny and so on, our Irish Donny. Trump 2024 hats are everywhere. Now, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, some people are saying that Donald Trump is definitely in, and you're crazy if you don't think so. I'm not 100% sure. If the Republican Party had its way, what they would do would be to nominate someone who takes all the good bits from their point of view of Trumpism and puts a new face on it. However, as long as he is there and he does have that passionate, dedicated following, he is going to be a factor that I think in time is going to wear thin with the people they need to win over to win elections. It's one thing to win a Republican nomination. It's another thing altogether to win an election. So from a Republican point of view, his continued presence isn't great. That having been said, and I know a lot of people here will take issue when I give them this cold, hard political analysis, Donald Trump's school of Republicanism and many of the things that he has said are winning propositions for the Republican Party.
Interesting. And Joe Biden, you're not uncritical of Joe Biden, but you say he is the best man for the job right now.
I think at this, in the wake of Donald Trump's presidency, I think that Joe Biden, as I say in the book, is probably the best man for an impossible task right now. You know, look, he's getting attacked from every direction at present, left and right, with people who aren't happy with him. He's made some mistakes. I think the pullout from Afghanistan, the way it was executed, was a big mistake that has dealt some damage to his calling cards. That is, he's a steady, competent hand. But let's face it, he's facing into governing a country where the climate is toxic. That's a thankless task. But I think his position as somebody who's been around a long time, somebody who is widely liked and respected, somebody who's taken the temperature down, we're not waking up every day to chaos. I think all of that is to be welcomed. Now, where things go after his term, that's going to be interesting.
And then when you look at the Irish political situation, because you're immersed in it now, you can't help but be, you say that systemic failures you see here are the things that could and should be addressed. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that I've always had a profound issue with the way Irish political parties operate. I think I'm a profound foe of the whip system, the way it is applied in this jurisdiction. I think that, look, and people will cite the practical difficulties that might fall out from it. But let me just say to you this. What organization in the world operates under the premise that on each and every single issue, you must agree, you must toe the line, and if you don't, goodbye. To me, that's objectively a crazy idea. I think, of course, there's a need for party discipline. Of course, that need is more pronounced in a system like a parliamentary system than in a system like the United States. But to me, that's a real systemic flaw and an issue that I've had since I started following Irish politics. And as you say, since I immersed myself in it.
You dabbled in politics early in your life. Would you consider going back there?
Well, I mean, I say in the book, I would never close that door. I mean, politics is what animates me. It's what keeps me going every day, sad as that might sound. I believe politics is a noble profession. I love this country very dearly. I think I have something to contribute, so I would never close the door.
How would you cope with the whip system?
Through gritted teeth, I suspect.
Larry, thanks very much for coming in. The book is called The Bostonians, published by Gill Books by Larry Donnelly, and it's out now. Thank you so much, Larry. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.